You're now listening to The Brian Callen Show, rated the number one podcast of all time.
Of all time. Make sure you're ready, because this is the podcast where you are guaranteed to learn virtually everything. All right, everybody, this is The Brian Callen Show, and very quickly, I will be at the West Palm Beach Improv May 10th, 11th, and 12th. And then I'll be at Portland, in Portland, at Helium Comedy Club, May 16th, 17th, 18th. So come out and bring your seatbelts and wear your boner pants, because I'm bringing heat. Sounds awesome. My guest, I've had athletes, I've had lawyers, I've had famous actors, comedians, I've had everybody, and my guest is Kurt Schwengel, and you guys don't know him, but I was fascinated because my daughter's going to go to your school, and when you got up and spoke, a lot of the women, there was a little bit of a hum. They were like, oh, there's the superstar. You've been teaching kindergarten. You were a D1 ball player.
I pitched at UCLA.
Pitched at UCLA as a D1 ball player. And you've been teaching kindergarten at the sort of crown jewel of kindergartens in Southern California. Everybody wants to live in this neighborhood. You got to make some cash.
Let me tell you, it's $100,000. It's a public school,
yeah.
But the dividing line between our school and the next school is 14th Street.
Yeah.
That side of 14th Street,
yeah.
This side of 14th Street, $100,000 property value.
$100,000.
$100,000.
Yeah. It's crazy.
So you think it's a public, you think it's free, but it's not.
It ain't. And I'm, by the way, I'm renting, ladies and gentlemen. I'm renting. And you've been teaching for how many years?
17 years. All kindergarten.
All kindergarten.
All kindergarten.
This is fascinating to me because you don't know this, but I found the character for my script that I'm going to be writing, and we're going to talk about that. But you're obviously, when I walked into your class, I mean, this is what fascinates me about people. There's a reason you're so good at what you do. The theme was Greece. You were teaching kids math through bowling. You were dressed in a bowling shirt. Mm-hmm. You had the song from Grease 2. I mean, the details are unbelievable.
Great. Now, did you know that was from Grease 2 offhand?
I did. You walked in? I did.
You're good.
I don't play around. But nobody would.
I'm horrified at how few people know that.
Well, but see, but that's the difference, is that you did this little, like, I'll give you an example. Patty Jenkins, who wrote and directed the movie Monster. Mm-hmm. And she said they wanted to shoot the movie in Canada, but she wanted to shoot the movie in Florida because the events that take place in the movie, which is about a female serial killer in Florida, took place in Florida. And I said, and she was having a fit. There's no way she was going to do it in Canada. I said, why? She said, because the light is different. The light is different in Southern Florida. And I said, what? Nobody's going to notice. She goes, they won't notice. They won't think they notice, but they'll notice. They won't know why, but they will.
That's exactly the way I run my classroom. I call it full immersion. Like, if we're studying bowling, we're not just bowling in class. The kids you saw, they're wearing bowling shirts. We're listening to bowling music. I got some Big Lebowski queued up. It's next week we start studying pirates. The kids dress as pirates. Everything is pirates. Every writing assignment, every math. So it's like a language. It's full immersion or nothing to me. Like, when I'm building these units, I plan them like a birthday party. Okay, how am I going to decorate the rooms? What are the kids going to wear? What am I going to wear? What are they going to do? So it's got to be, I'm like that director, full immersion or it's not worth it.
That's fascinating to me, because most men, I watch my father with my child. She's just a little too young for him to be interested in. Yet you're fascinated, obviously, with kids because you're looking at something different. And that's what I was fascinated about. I thought to myself, you know, you were a D1 ball player, and you're a guy, good looking guy. A lot of men in this society, we're taught to be very ambitious and leave a mark in something like law or medicine or and we don't have enough teachers. Teaching is an art. Mm-hmm. But what was it that drove you to teach that age group over, you know, high school or college?
One thing, creativity. The lower you go in school, the more creative you're allowed to be. Like, I can't do a Star Wars unit in fourth grade. Like, I'd have to teach California missions and division and cursive and all this stuff. But the lower you go, the more creative you're going to be. So, like, as long as I'm teaching reading and writing and math, I can package it however I want. So I can do bowling units, restaurant units, baseball, basketball, bowling, whatever I want to do, as long as I'm teaching to the state standards, it's all cool. And at a school like Franklin, where we're not teaching out of a boxed curriculum like they do in LA Unified, where they actually teach from a script. Like a lot of classrooms in LA Unified, the principal will walk into your classroom and say, what page number are you on from the textbook? Mm. And that's as low as kindergarten.
Wow.
So it was definitely the creativity.
So it doesn't, they stifle creativity. They don't allow the teacher to use his own personality, right. His own ingenuity.
Well, there's a reason for that. When they did, remember like 10 years ago when they did class size reduction? Not Schwarzenegger, the governor before him, Pete Wilson, reduced class size to 20.
Right.
Sounds great,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
There's a cost. We needed 10,000 more teachers, okay? And so the classrooms got flooded with these inexperienced teachers, mostly young girls straight out of college, you know, maybe getting emergency credentials, skipping their masters and stuff like that. And so they created these boxed curriculums with scripts for all these brand new, not knowing what they're doing teachers to just read from. And then those took off and kind of became the norm. And wow. Ever since then, they've stuck around in some districts like LA Unit, like the monster of LA Unified. And now it's kind of like the norm where you just, you know, oh, here's a new kindergarten teacher. Here's your script. Mm. And, you know, you couldn't pay me enough money to teach from a script, especially right. One that I didn't write. So so that's where those came from, is from, you know, the good intention of reducing class size.
You reduce the teacher quality.
Yeah, but the teacher quality, you know, nobody can deny.
Well, because teaching is not easy.
No.
I mean, it's just not. It's an art. It trying to reach people, trying to motivate and inspire people at any age. I've done it. I mean, mm-hmm. I know how difficult that can be and how frustrating that can be. And you know, you're also dealing with children. Human beings are so different, right? Which I wanted to ask you about, because I have a friend who wrote a book called The Straight A Conspiracy. The idea is that he looked at a lot of science. He's a very smart guy, and he and his partner looked at a lot of science. And they've really never isolated a gene for intelligence. They've isolated 300 genes for mental retardation there would be. Meaning that he believes, and he's backed up with some science, that nobody's really, we are taught how to learn, but how quickly we learn and what we learn has a great deal to do with the emotional context it is framed in.
Mm-hmm.
So if you come to something and somebody tells you you're not a math person because you're a girl, you're right. Not going to be a math person.
Right.
If you come from a culture, say in Asia, say a Chinese, you're Chinese. and Malcolm Gladwell writes this in his book. The notion that mathematics is hard is not in the equation. Life is hard.
Right.
That has nothing to do with whether or not you're going to do math. You're going to do math.
Mm-hmm.
It might take you 4 hours. You're going to do it.
Right.
All right. So some cultures don't, well, they're not hearing that this is really hard. I can't do this. I'm not a math person. You're a math person, bro.
Right.
It might take you 4 hours. So I wondered what your philosophy on learning is and how you raise your own children in that context.
Well, you know, first of all, it's like you said, you know, teaching is, it's an art. It's not a science. And it's not just an art. It's a performing art.
Mm.
And that's why, you know, in teaching, what we need are more performers. People who, for whatever reason, can't get up and do stand-up comedy, but they can sit in front of 30 people, 30 kids and entertain them. You know, because, you know, I'm also the high school baseball coach, and I'm always asking the kids, who are your favorite teachers? Invariably, it's the funniest teachers.
Yes.
Invariably, if you look back at, you know, especially boys, your favorite teacher was the most entertaining one.
That's
he was
right.
The one that dressed up as George Washington or did something zany all day to keep your interest.
Yeah.
So that's the first thing, is interest. You know, that's where I think we're really failing these kids, is we have to give up this myth that everybody's going to college.
Mm, I've heard that before.
You know, I mean, how horrible is it that we spit out high school graduates who can't change their oil in their car
yeah.
or fix the toilet?
Yeah. They don't learn the industrial sciences.
Yeah, we'll pump them full of these facts that they're going to forget 5 minutes after the test, right? But home ec, you know, auto shop, all these things have all gone away. And those were the things we were actually, they called them life skills. And that's mm-hmm. exactly what they were.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, when the kids aren't interested in what they're learning about, that's just most of it right there, is how are we going to teach these kids anything that they're not interested in learning?
Mm.
You know, I'm not suggesting that the kids should be picking a major in eighth grade, but we just have to, you know, the reason kids are failing out of school is because they're not taking the classes they want to take.
They're not taking the classes they want to take.
I mean,
if I made you czar of all schools and you've been teaching for 17 years, obviously very successfully, what are the two, three things you would change first?
One of my teachers is going to probably kill me for saying this. The union.
I was going to ask you. I wondered if you'd say that.
I'm a card carrying union member because I have to be. You know, yep. Santa Monica is a closed shop. You don't get a choice to join the union or not. You're going to pay
union.
Those dues. Yeah. Now you can kind of decide whether those union dues go to the political pot or the non-political pot.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, but you're a member of the union.
Yeah.
Now to me, it's just like education. Public education will never be great. How can public education become great when you can't fire people for not being great? Huh. It's the same as stewardesses. You know, I mean, you know, any place where there's a union, you're gonna find inferior service, people doing the minimum, you know, just not to get fired and stuff
like that.
Well,
it's human, isn't it? I mean, when there's no accountability, or when there are really no stakes, when your performance is not tied in with your compensation.
Yes.
When you are not held to a standard, or else we are all lazy, man.
Right.
It's just human. And what you're talking about is an incentive structure.
Well, and that's the problem with this. They call it voucher pay, where the better your kids do, the more money you make.
Mm-hmm.
And they've implemented this in like Chicago. I think it was Gladwell that wrote about this, the Freakonomics guy.
Yeah, Stephen Levitt.
They caught all those teachers cheating.
That's right.
To get more pay, man. Well, I can get my kindergartners to read at a third grade level if it meant I would make $200,000 next year.
That's right.
I mean, it's not that they would read. I would just teach to the test all day.
Right.
I'd put the bowling alley away. I wouldn't teach pirates. I would just teach, you know, how to bubble in a test.
Sure.
You know, and guess and stuff. So voucher pay is not the answer. The union, it's not that it doesn't have its, you know, I doubt I would have gotten a raise in the last 17 years if it weren't for the union.
Mm-hmm.
So it does a lot of good things. But it's just way too strong.
It's way too strong.
Yeah. And, you know, one of my other jobs is
Are you worried about saying this publicly?
Yeah.
No, I mean, but you're being honest. I think a lot of teachers would agree
with
that.
Because of the union, they can't, you know, the union isn't going to reprimand me. The school will only love that I'm saying it. So I'm not really afraid of it because there's no ramifications because of the union,
right,
you know?
Right, right.
But, you know, one of my other gigs is I travel the country teaching other teachers how to teach, technology and creative teaching. So, you know, I'll go to like 15 to 20 states a year, and it's, you know, some states, like I think it's Texas and Oklahoma, not union states, not union states at all. Like when I say I'll show them slides of me teaching and stuff. And, you know, I can tell when there's a non-union state is when I show slides of what I wear to work and there's a gasp in the room. Because I usually wear shorts, flip-flops, and a t-shirt, right?
Yeah.
And when there's a noticeable gasp in the room, like, like that, I go, wait a second. You guys aren't a union state, are you? Because non-union states have very strict dress codes.
Otherwise, you're getting fired and you're getting reprimanded. Yeah.
It's like, you know, in a union, when there's a union involved, you know, my contract says I have to dress professionally.
Right.
What's professionally?
Yeah.
I mean, I teach kindergarten, you know, I got kids with, you know, paint all over their hands and bodily functions everywhere and stuff. You can't really ask me to dress up every single day in a tie.
Right.
So the union is good and it's also too powerful. That's one thing I'd change. Voucher pays. I just don't see
explain it again what a voucher pay
is. Okay. Voucher pay is just... Oh, I'm sorry. It's merit pay, not voucher pay. Merit
in other words,
pay.
You get paid based on your student's
performance.
And the problem with that is there are a lot of people that are just going
to
cut corners.
How could teachers not? And this is what I explain to teachers when I'm on the road. Subconsciously, we all cheat on the tests.
Sure.
Because like I have to give kindergartners, because they can't bubble in stuff, I have to give them their tests individually.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm basically pointing to words and saying, can you read this? Can you read that? If I think a child can read that word, you know what I do?
Mm.
I give them more time.
Mm.
And that's on a subconscious level,
mm-hmm.
you know? And when I tell other teachers like this, you know, 300 teachers in the room, all their heads will nod and they'll go, yeah, I do that too.
Yeah.
But when you think a child doesn't know the answer, you kind of go, okay, what's that word? Nope. Okay. What's that word? Nope. Okay. What's that one? If you think they know it, you go, come on, stop being silly. You know that word, right. You know, and you'll give them another chance or give them more time.
It's part of the instinct of teaching.
So now imagine attaching that to a teacher's salary and saying, but don't cheat. But this has to be subjective, you know? And
yeah,
that's
all
what
you do is whisper the answer.
Yeah, I mean.
Or whatever.
We already have teachers cheating on these tests before merit pay. You know, right. It's not even, they don't even benefit from it.
Right.
And they can't help themselves but cheat. So
sure. How
can you ask this group of you know, members of society to not nudge these kids in a certain direction?
Especially when teachers don't make enough money.
Okay. You want to get into that?
Yeah.
You want to go down that road?
I do.
When you become a teacher, you get a salary scale. You know what you're going to make in 30 years, okay? Mm. Now, as an actor, imagine being handed that salary scale, okay? And you see that you're going to make $80,000 in 3 years or 30 years at the end of your career, okay?
Doesn't pay my bills.
Doesn't pay your bills. Are you going to become an actor?
No.
No. But if you do become an actor, should you complain about how much you make?
No.
It's what you signed up for.
That's right.
You know, so... And that's another thing is, you know, if we really want education to be great, it would be great if we could be recruiting. If we could be recruiting the brightest minds,
right?
Who would we be competing with? Doctors and lawyers.
That's right. And bankers.
And so we're not talking when people say, oh, teachers aren't paid enough. You know, when they raise the pay of teachers and stuff, let's just say teachers around here probably start at $45,000.
Right.
Okay.
But in today's world, that's just not enough money.
Right. But even if we increased it to $65,000, it's not going to change the pool of teachers.
Right.
We're still going to get the same.
My feeling is that you would change it to, let's say, 120 grand or something because make it competitive.
Starting or max out?
Well, you've got to be able to, I would say, you know, maybe, I don't know, but I would certainly say that you've got to be able to think that in 30 years, even though you're working 9 months a year, you're going to be very comfortable. I don't think there's anything wrong with that. 30 years is a long time, mm-hmm. especially if you're teaching our future. And I think that the motivation would be twofold. One, I don't have to worry about my bills. I have excess income to do things like, you know, go on a cruise twice a year mm-hmm. or whatever. And then finally, I have retirement security with a really nice house.
The pension is sick.
Yeah.
The teacher's pension is insane.
It's good or it's bad?
It's fantastic.
Really?
Yeah. It's going to bankrupt California, but it's fantastic. Beyond fantastic.
Is it really?
Yeah.
All right. Well, okay. Then that's motivating. But I think that you've got to pay people now because 30 years is a long way to look. So it seems to me, and I don't know where the money comes from, but I'm not a government accountant,
mm-hmm.
but I'm just talking about placing value and paying for value. This is very, very important. Education seems to me to be twofold. Talk to a principal in Kansas. He said, there's nothing wrong with our education system. Our parents suck.
Oh.
So that's another one, you know. A lot of people having kids that shouldn't have kids. So you just have to say that. You know, you can have a great school, but if the kid is living in a shithole,
that's right.
Very different, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a multi-tiered problem, but I think it goes back to... also, my buddy, and I want to know what you think of this, he had a very interesting point. He said, I think that we have to get rid of the idea that you're good at some things or not good at others. I think we should embrace the philosophy that you can truly do whatever you want, depending on how much effort you're willing to put into it. Not that you're gifted in this and you're not gifted mm-hmm. in that. And we all come from that orthodoxy. I don't know how you feel about that. Obviously, there's some kids that are better at some things than others, right?
Well, you know, in junior high now, you're already on track. You could tell what math a kid is going to graduate high school in by the time they're in sixth grade.
No.
Because they're either put into the advanced class or not. And then seventh grade, eighth grade, it just goes up. So we're pigeonholing these kids in sixth grade and determining kind of their whole high school career as far as what they're going to do.
Wow.
You know, so a lot of these kids who don't get into the advanced math, you know, because they're not good test takers or whatever, they're like, they feel like, okay, well, I guess math isn't my thing in sixth grade. Mm. In sixth grade, math isn't my thing. Before they've been exposed, you know, to geometry and statistics and all this other different forms of math, because they didn't do good on the standardized tests in fifth grade, we just say, okay, math probably isn't going to be your thing.
Right.
You know, and there's no catch up. You know, same with reading. Like, man, you know, in American education, you better know how to read by second grade.
Yeah.
Because they don't teach it in third grade.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's
yeah,
like,
yeah, yeah.
you know, you are just, you're either on track or you're off track.
Well, you know, to what degree is tough love necessary? And what I mean by that is that, you know, I have a lot of friends that have a lot of money, and their biggest worry is that their kids are not going to grow up with a sense of value or hunger. Mm-hmm. And that's very common. A lot of people that come from a lot of money and they end up in and out of rehab their whole life, right, or whatever it might be. And that's the great irony of life in some ways. A lot of good can come out of struggle or just a middle class upbringing.
I mean, you know, we're a lot of times we're just handing the kids the education on a silver platter. Mm. It's like, you know, sometimes the reason I don't give homework in kindergarten is because it's not homework for the kids. It's homework for the parents.
Right.
The parents end up doing it. And that goes all the way through. And I'm telling you, are you ready for this? All the way through high school. Parents are now helping their kids with their homework. Mm-mm. And these kids are like straight A students. And then they start to falter a little bit as they get older. And I just want to sit these parents down and go, your kid's not a straight A student. You're a straight A student.
So they're
been doing their homework for them.
Wow.
If a kid isn't motivated, if you have to sit down and do your homework with your kid, he's not a straight A student. Straight A students do it on their own.
Yeah, I think there's this sort of collective misstep, this notion that I got to get my kids ahead before it's too late. Life is long.
Yes.
I learned stuff in my 20s and 30s. I mean, the rest of the time was a controlled fall, and that's okay, man. You know, I was a late bloomer.
Mm-hmm.
And I really do think we put way too much pressure. My nephew wanted to play baseball. He was 12, and he goes, oh, no, these kids are way ahead of me by now.
Yeah.
I went, man, these kids are going to camps and everything else, batting coaches. I understand the world's a competitive place. You got a disposable income. You want your kid to be the best. Man, oh, man, though, that's a good way to burn your child out.
Let me tell you something. If your kid hasn't picked a sport by the age of 10, you're in trouble.
God.
I'm telling you.
Incredible.
Because of travel baseball, these kids are playing year-round. Tennis, forget about it. These kids are training with cones.
Tennis is crazy.
I mean, it's just nuts.
I watched a bunch of Southern California kids. They were 8, 9 years old hitting the ball like better than I was.
You know, when I'm born and raised here in Santa Monica. And when I came up, you know, you played, you know, football in the fall, basketball in the winter, and baseball in the spring.
Yeah.
Now, unless you're Deion Sanders, you know, unless you're really a really, really talented athlete, you pick one sport and that's your sport all year long.
Wow.
That's your I mean, you specialize.
And
as early as 10, 11, 12 just go, nope, I'm not on the All-Star. I didn't make the All-Stars. My career is over.
My God.
And it's not completely untrue. It's so hard to catch up. It is so hard to catch up when everybody else is playing year-round. If you want to just be a spring baseball player, man.
When did that happen and why and how?
Sometime in the last 10 to 15 years.
Why is it?
Well, part of it's economics. Now, Little League didn't used to be a moneymaker.
Uh-huh.
Now, travel baseball is like $300 a month per kid.
What do you mean? That's what it costs.
That's what it costs the kids. So now you've got all these coaches who, who used to have jobs and, you know, just coach from 4 o'clock on. Now it's their career. What do? Oh, I teach a couple travel ball teams. That's like what you
kidding
do.
Me.
No, that's what you do when you graduate
Good
college
God.
Now. You go back to your hometown and you try to start travel ball teams.
$300, that's baseball for the elite.
Oh, it's...
And when you add it on to all the rest of the
stuff? It's complete elitism. And they wonder why African Americans aren't playing that much more baseball anymore.
Wow.
It's because it costs $300 a month to play instead of $300 a year.
Wow.
It's now $300 a month. So now they're getting less
touches. Well, everybody's black is either from the Dominican Republic or Cuba or wherever.
That's just a whole different factory over there. But over here, you know, same thing with football. Football's year round. Travel basketball, everything. It's all year round and it's all money making. So part of it is economic, is that now that there's a market for all these young coaches to start if you start 2 or 3 teams, you don't need a job. That's your job.
Wow.
You know, and it's kind of tough to secure field space and stuff like that. But once you got it, that's your job. And so what that's doing is it's getting the kids. We're not producing a better baseball player in the end. Okay. Mm. In high school, it all catches up.
It does.
But what we're doing is we're getting them to become really good baseball players younger. But ultimately, they're not going to be better. You know, we're not going to see Barry Bonds in high school because he's been playing year round.
Yeah.
It just gets them to their maximum potential a little bit sooner.
Mm.
But what it really does is prices out all the poor kids. just prices them right out of the sport.
You know, I've always been a defender of capitalism, but I'll tell you what, that doesn't bode well.
It is. It's rough. It's rough to watch. You know, as a high school coach, you know, it's tough to see all these little leaguers.
Well, it's also wrong. I mean, in a way, it's also shitty. It's also, you know, makes me feel bad.
It's not good. It's not good in any way.
Wow.
Yeah. It's changed a lot.
Make money or your kid goes home sad.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, and that's whether or not you play. You know, some of these teams have 14, 15 kids on them. Still, everybody's paying, but not everybody's playing.
Everybody's paying, not everybody's playing.
It's rough.
Oh, man. My son's going to wrestle. That's what he's going to do. Literally, that's what
swimming.
I did.
Swimming.
Yeah, I was a wrestler.
There's no politics. Man. Get him into a non-political sport.
He's going to box.
Where
he's
gonna
wrestle.
A time or a score like golf.
Yeah.
You know, like if your kid shoots lower than another kid, he's better. But in baseball, every parent thinks that their kid is the best.
Oh,
every
my God. You must deal with, you probably can't talk too much about it, but just parents who are like, why isn't my kid playing?
Because
he sucks. He's not as good.
It's tough.
Yeah.
All of a sudden, these parents who've been watching the sport for all these years forget that there's something called a batting average. And I now need to explain to them why their kid's not starting. I have to explain to them why their kid who's batting .150 isn't in the starting lineup.
Because he hits the ball not almost one-tenth of the time. I need someone who hits at 30%. Do the math. Here are the numbers. They don't
lie. And then
lie.
They'll say, but it's all line drives. And I go, man, that's baseball.
They're breaking
I'm
it down
sorry.
To that. It's all
I'm
line drives.
I'm sorry that your kid hits a line drive to the center fielder every single time.
Unbelievable.
You're either on base or you're not.
What a world we live in.
Yeah,
man.
It's tough. It's tough. But what? It's changed a lot. You know, I mean, the kids are still great. You know, it's great that I coach at the school I went to because the kids are pretty much the same. But the sport has really, really changed a lot.
Yeah.
You know, and it's
yet it doesn't
evolving.
Make for better athletes in the
not
end.
At all. Not at
because
all.
there's a school of thought that suggests even that when you don't sort of play a large number of sports when you're really young, it can actually hurt you. It's better
absolutely.
To play.
Yeah. No, these kids, and it's like you said before, it's the burnout factor too.
Oh yeah.
At some point, you know, my kid was a tournament tennis player and he just flat out burned out at 11 or 12 because he didn't want to put in the work. He didn't want to practice like, you know, running cones. But, you know, without a tennis racket, he loved to play, but he didn't want to get into training. And by 11 and 12, if you don't like to train, you're not playing tennis.
Yeah, but who the hell? I don't like to train. What are these people doing?
Plus, and what you do in tennis, it's almost like gymnastics. If your kid's really good, he goes to live in Florida.
Well, that's right. And Andre Agassi's did you read that autobiography?
Yes.
My God.
Can you believe that? I mean,
what's it called? Life
that's
or
the goal.
Open?
That's the goal of a lot of tennis parents is so that your kid will get good enough to go live at the Bolletieri factory in Florida.
He
at
hated
12.
Tennis. His dad gave him methamphetamine to keep him awake when he was playing. Hey,
absolutely.
Dad, thanks.
Absolutely. Yeah. So, yeah, get your kid involved in a nice non-political sport where you can just point to their score or their time. And just
well, you teach the art of teaching in a way. Mm-hmm. I mean, what is it that you? How do you do that? What is your belief system in that? What is your criteria? How do
well,
you?
Well, the first thing I tell teachers is, do you like kids? See, it's like it seems common sense.
Very, very
think
important.
Back, think
question.
Back to your education about how many teachers you had that didn't like kids.
I had.
It's like trying to become an accountant and you don't like numbers.
Yeah.
And it, you know, so if you like kids, then you got a good base for teaching.
Right.
If you like performing, that's the second most important thing. Oh. You know, if there are some great minds out there, but if you don't have a voice that kids kind of perk up to,
I had a math teacher in high school who was. She was a math teacher, and she would come in and she would go, "All right, everybody, let's pick up a writing implement, and we will know." I was like, a writing implement. She was so fat, she had fat wrists. That's the last place you put your fat on your body.
What do you call it? Okay, there's cankles. What do you call it when it's on the wrist?
I don't know, man. I don't know. Balloon wrists. And she had a mustache, for real. And I remember just looking at her going, what in the world? And why are you calling it a fucking writing implement? Can you just speak English? I'm already dead inside.
How
having
to
watch
squash
this.
Their dreams 101.
I mean, yeah. Yeah. You know, the way history is taught a lot of times, instead of being taught like how individuals and ideas change everything, spark a whole new revolution, we teach by rote,
yes,
right?
Rote.
Dates. And I don't want to fucking learn dates. I need now, context.
Let's talk about higher education, you know, like high school and stuff. What if I were to tell you that in your pocket you have the entire wealth of human knowledge. Okay? Every kid in high school has an iPhone.
You mean
now.
Google?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay? How much is education going to change over the next 50 years now that every kid has access to any answer you want in about 5 seconds?
It's kind of crazy. I never even thought of that.
It's like, well,
I never
how much
thought of that.
State capitals. Why are we teaching state capitals and not oil changing? I mean, at what point are we going to say, you know what? We got to get rid of all this rote memorization.
As usual, it's a dinosaur and takes a long time to change. Yeah. Why haven't we changed the tax code?
It's a slow
moving ship.
There's
money in the status quo.
But eventually, have you heard of Google Glass?
No.
You know what that is? It's the Google glasses that Google's making that has a computer screen in the glass.
Stop. So
my brother's test piloting one right now. So you just say, what's the state capital of North Dakota? And in the glasses,
dude, come on,
it comes up and tells you. And I don't even know. I wish I did. I'm pretty bad that I chose a state that I don't know. What's the capital of North Dakota?
North Dakota, Fargo, maybe?
You're just a movie fan. That's the only North Dakota. I don't know. I don't know
That's
if it's
exactly
Fargo or
right.
not.
That's exactly right.
But you know, I mean, all of this information is going to be not just, you know, oh, hold on, let me get up my phone out of my pocket and punch it in. It's going to be asking your glasses, hey, what's the capital of North Carolina? Or where's the nearest Chipotle? You know, and a little Google map comes up in your glasses.
So
how much is that going to change education? Like, let me ask you another question. What's the hardest math problem you've done in the last year?
I mean, calculating the tip on at a restaurant.
That's right.
I mean, really?
Unless you've been redecorating your home and you had to figure out the square footage of something with maybe a cutout fireplace
or
something like that.
That's right.
And you did something with volume or something like that.
Yeah.
At what point do we say, okay, enough with the calculus?
Right. I don't need to. That's exactly
right. You know, it's like.
I'll leave that up to NASA.
Right.
You know,
once the kids are on 10th and 11th grade
and
they want to pursue math or, you know, maybe be an astronaut, that's great. But why are we jamming it down these kids'
throats? The answer to that question that I've been taught is that it teaches you how to think.
Yeah, it teaches you how to get frustrated.
Yeah. Well, that's true. There is an art to learning. Have you read a book by Josh Waitzkin called The Art of Learning?
No, I'm not.
He was the kid that they made the movie Searching for Bobby Fischer.
Oh, right.
Chess
that's
prodigy.
Why I knew the name, right.
And he was a martial arts guy, and he just talks about how learning, there's an art to it, and how when you do something for long enough, but of course he works inhumanly hard and figured out, you know, how to play 10 people at chess at one time and all that stuff. But so performer, gotta like kids, gotta like performing. And then what is the best way in general, do you think, to get to somebody when they're doing something wrong? I'm just talking about adults or anybody. Is that the tough part?
I mean, that's just interpersonal skills. You know, it's whether it's teaching kindergarten or coaching, there's no right answer to it. You know, you have to have, like, a lot of teachers say, oh, I have one discipline system for my class. No, you don't. You have 25 different discipline systems for 25 different kids.
Yeah.
You know, if one kid hits one kid, it's a completely different scenario than if this kid hits another kid, you know? And that's why it's not a science, it's an art. You know, if there was an answer to that question, okay, we would teach it and everybody would be a great teacher.
Mm.
And it would be easy, you know? But because it's an art and it's all about, like, same thing with parenting, you know, to me, there's no good parents. There's no bad parents. You know, it's just all about matches because I've seen some of the best parents have the worst kids and some of the worst parents have the best kids.
Is that right?
Your parenting style either jives with your kid or it doesn't jive with your kid. And that's why in a lot of families you see, like, say, three kids, you know, good kid, bad kid, good kid. Well, if it was all parenting, assuming that you're parenting your three children the same way, wouldn't they all turn out perfect?
Right.
Or they'd all turn out rotten?
Some people learn by moving. Other people learn by still being still.
Exactly.
Right? I mean, we all learn. I can't write or move or write jokes or do what I do without moving. I write when I walk my dog. I can't sit still.
Yeah. Does your mind ever sit still?
No.
Yeah. But I'll bet you know people who you look at them and you go, man, when he's staring at a wall, he's just staring at a wall.
That's right.
It's like,
I had a girlfriend like that. I realized, I was like, she was so hot. And I realized, I was like, holy shit, there's nothing behind your head. There's nothing behind your eyes. You're not thinking about a goddamn thing. Like, I was like, you're just sitting there looking. You just look at stuff. I was like, I can't be around this.
I ruined a relationship for my best friend once. We were at a really fancy sushi restaurant. We were double dating. And the bill came. And I slapped my Subway card down. Right? Okay. Three of us got the joke at the table, yeah. And his girlfriend didn't get
the
joke. She was just like, why would they take a Subway card at the sushi restaurant? He broke up with her. He saw her for what she was, not funny, and he said, there's no future here.
There's no future. I had this a similar experience. My buddy was joking around. There was these dogs that were dressed in up as as human with glasses.
That's
so
creepy.
Corny, right? Really corny and stupid. And he starts laughing hysterically because he's pretending it's funny, but he's laughing like, ah. She starts fake laughing too. She's like, yeah, it's really funny. It's so funny. And she keeps, and I was like, oh no, I'm so fucking embarrassed. We're so broken up. I can't tell you. It was the worst. When you are, let me ask you this, innocence for a child, my children are very young. So mm-hmm. I'm always feeling like I have to protect their innocence. A lot of that is very natural. I think you want your child to think that the world is a beautiful place.
Right.
I'm sure you've had to deal with children who experience tragedy at way too early an age. Mm-hmm. A child loses a parent. How do you deal with that? How does one deal with a child? How innocent are children? How much do they actually know? Because we tend to look at a 5-year-old, 6-year-old, 7-year-old and think they don't know anything. They
right.
know a whole lot more than we and maybe even understand in some ways more than we think.
Absolutely.
Yes?
Since I teach kindergarten, I do a big Star Wars unit in the class. Which culminates, we study Star Wars for 3 weeks, and it's like my fairy tale. The other classes are learning Hansel and Gretel and Little Red Riding Hood, and we're learning Star Wars. And at the end of the unit, we all meet in the classroom at 8 a.m. on a Saturday morning, and we watch all 6 movies back to back to back to back.
Wow.
Okay? We have a Star Wars movie marathon in the classroom. And to me, Star Wars is, like I said, a fairy tale, but to a lot of parents, it's like a rite of passage. And a lot of the parents want to hold on to it and keep their kids young.
Oh, yeah.
And they're like, oh, I don't know if my kid's ready for Star Wars. I don't know, And it's that kind of, at what point do we just kind of let them go and expose them to a little bit more
death,
pop culture?
Death and things.
That's the thing about, I edit the movies a little bit. Mm. The only thing that really freaks them out is at the end of episode 1 when they burn Qui-Gon Jinn's body.
Mm.
That's the only part that really freaks the kids out,
Wow.
1 year I left it in and they just didn't get it. It was just completely over their head. They just didn't get it at all. But a lot of the parents are very concerned at the beginning of the Star Wars unit. Oh, my kids, we're a non-gun family. We don't have guns in the house. And I go, have they ever seen a gun? Oh, I'm not sure. I go, have they ever been to another kid's house? Then they've seen a gun. Nerf guns.
Sure.
You flip on the TV. You can't go to a kid's movie without seeing, some kind of preview that you just go, what is that doing in here? So especially with the first one, you want to hold on to that innocence. For the second and third one, the exposure is all done. As a parent, you'll see.
You mean second and third child?
Yeah. By the time you get to the second and third child, you're just throwing them to the wolves.
But they can handle it, can't they, for the most part?
I think they can. Now, kindergarten's funny because that's the only grade where you decide whether or not your kid's old enough to go. You don't decide whether or not your kid's old enough to go to third grade.
Right.
So it's some of those kids on the bubble, some of those kids that show up at 4 years old.
Yeah.
Basically, the maturity line in kindergarten is during choice time when the kids get to do whatever they want. Sometimes they'll play dinosaurs.
Hmm.
Now, I have a bunch of plastic dinosaurs in my class. The older, more mature kids play with the plastic dinosaurs. The younger, immature kids become dinosaurs. They're still doing the imaginary play.
Cool. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You get to see by the end of the year, nobody's really stomping around the room at the end of the year going, I'm a T-Rex. But at the beginning of the year, there's, half the class doing
that.
But
isn't that very interesting? That's a very interesting distinction because it's almost as though you grow up and you lose your innocence slowly or very quickly sometimes. And then maturity, and you just described both, mm-hmm. maturity is actually the acceptance, the realization and acceptance of what you will never become.
Absolutely.
And settling into who you really are.
Yeah.
I'm just now at 46 doing that, by the way.
I mean,
there's so much you I'm sure as an athlete, you have the same issue. It's like you got to let go at the end of the day if you're never going to be a pro ball player.
I see it with my high school kids.
Yeah.
Some of the high school kids still think they're going to be pro baseball players. Santa Monica High School in the last 50 years has produced four major leaguers.
Wow.
In 50 years. Four
God,
major leaguers.
That's as rare as a great white shark attack.
Now ask me how many of my kids think they're going to be major leaguers.
How many?
Oh. It's more than four. I'll tell you that.
It sure is. It sure is.
It's more than four. Yeah. And, you know, and
God bless him, by the
and
way.
And, you know, but here's the problem. David Eckstein, you know, the little shortstop, you know, there's Tim Lincecum. There's all these little guys that were told by every coach they ever had.
Small. Yeah, yeah.
By every coach they ever had, oh, you're not going to be it. You're not going to. Yeah. So you never want to tell these kids
even
you're
Pedro,
not going to do
Pedro,
it.
Even Pedro from Boston.
Martinez?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, he's 5'11". They said, they said you're going to burn out. He was 170 or something. They said, you're going to burn out. You don't have the arm strength. You're not
right.
going to be. Because most major league pitchers, as you know, are big.
Yes.
Dudes. I stood in the Yankee lineup as a goof when I was doing a TV show.
Uh-huh.
To sign balls. I was so much smaller, and I'm 5'11". I was
right.
so much smaller than these guys, just frame-wise
Dude,
and everything.
Even the second
the
baseman.
The kids were like, you're not a baseball player.
The second basemans are huge.
They were all
I
huge.
I mean, they're just monsters.
By the way, they were also juicing out of their fucking minds. Which, by the way, I was going to go do a movie. I was going to do Due Date, and at one point I was told I might play the part that Danny McBride got. And Todd said, "You got to be. Can you put on muscle? Some muscle?" I go, "Yes." Yeah. So I go to my trainer. I go, "I want to put some muscle on." He goes, "Yeah. How much?" I go, "Like 15 pounds." He goes, "Oh, do you?" He goes, "Oh, okay. Well, you're a coat hanger, and the only way I'm doing that is if I change your endocrine system. You want to go on juice? I can do that. I need about 3 months." I was like, "What do you mean?" He goes, "You're not putting on that kind of muscle, bro." He goes, "See that guy's steroids?" That he was pointing these guys out. I was so naive.
That's right.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, you know, in my baseball opinion, most of those guys are doing something.
Yeah,
Ryan Braun.
Listen, I know a lot of pro athletes.
You can tell by their swing.
Yeah,
you could tell by their.
You mean because their bat speed quickens in their 30s? You mean Barry Bonds, who literally the people in the press pool were like, "Well, his helmet size is bigger. We know that. We know a 35. We know he's 240.
Right.
And when he came in the league, he was 185, 190. Right. We know that."
So what happened there?
I guess 50 pounds of muscle is real easy with protein shakes and flaxseed oil.
And you know what Major League Baseball, you know what they want to do is they want to point to the lower home run totals
yeah.
and say that they're protecting the game and the drugs are out of the game.
Yeah.
There's another factor. They can de-juice the balls. They juiced the balls
really?
From Maguire and Sosa.
Really?
You know, during the home run era, they juiced
really?
The balls. Now they can soften them. They're their balls. You know, I mean, it's not like you show up to the field with, you know, like the golfers who can use any, you get to pick their own golf ball.
Yeah.
Okay. Major League Baseball dictates the baseball, you know.
Wow.
So all they have to do is make the baseball a little bit softer, you know, make it not wound as tight, whatever yeah. they have to do. And all of a sudden home run totals go down and they get to say, oh, we've cleaned up the sport. Like hell they've cleaned up the sport. I mean, look at those guys. They're still beasts.
Yeah, they're beasts.
And they're getting popped beasts. Left and right. Why would, yeah. if the sport
it's
was
called
so
hormone
clean,
replacement
if
therapy.
The sport was so clean, why would we still be catching guys? You know,
listen,
I mean,
you
it's
can't
because
compete.
It's because the test finally catches up with what they're doing.
Look, if you're in the farm league and you love this sport and you've dedicated your whole life, if I tell you, I come to you and I go, hey, bro, listen to me. And I sympathize. Here's a little Wenstrol, Deca, whatever it might be in human growth. You'll stay injury-free. You're going to put about 15 pounds of muscle, look even better than you do. Oh, and by the way, you'll go to the majors and play the game you love.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, and by the way...
$200 million.
I was going to say, we're also going to pay you a minimum of $5 million more. I'll do that right fucking now. I'll
Sign
do it now. And by the way, I'll lie
Sign
about it.
Me
and I'll lie
up.
About it.
So, who was the father of steroids?
Now you're 33. You're starting to slow down. And all of a sudden they tell you just take a little juice, you're gonna feel better, you're gonna bang your wife even more or whatever. And by the way, you're gonna be hitting home runs. Sign me up, bro.
Do you remember who the father of steroids was?
No.
No, I can't.
No, hold on. It might have been how far back do I have to go? Because I can tell you.
I think the 90s.
Well, it's got to be either Hulk Hogan or Sylvester Stallone.
I mean baseball.
Oh, baseball.
In baseball.
Baseball. Hold on. I should know this. I don't believe it's Reggie Jackson because he was just built like a brick shit house. I don't
90s.
Believe it's Pete Rose.
I think it was the 90s.
Okay, the 90s. Well, there was Sosa was in 2000s. Hold on. Was it Gabe Kaplan?
Mm-hmm. Brady Anderson.
I don't remember.
Brady Anderson was a leadoff hitter for the Orioles.
Okay.
This dude went from 5 home runs to 50 home runs.
Okay? Yes.
And here's the proof that he was roiding. You know what else happened to Brady Anderson during that time?
He grew a horn.
He became the muse the most infatuated of players with the gay community.
Oh, awesome.
He was this great looking white guy. And all of a sudden, gays started coming to the field. And everybody's like, why?
What are these gay men?
And it was, Brady Anderson. And once the rest of baseball saw what Brady Anderson did in his home run leap, everybody jumped on board. And they go, wait a second. This little left-hander, this little leadoff hitter, just hit 50 home runs? What did he do?
Well, you know,
it didn't take long for him to figure out what he did.
It brings me to Ray Kurzweil, who wrote this book, The Singularity Is Near, and he's the one who predicted the internet, and he's a computer scientist. He said, look, nanotechnology is going to allow you to oxygenate your blood with little robots, basically, so you can run, you know, you can sprint 100 yard dash on one breath, you can swim underwater for an hour, whatever it might be. We're going to be able to gene dope, so we change the very structure of our muscles. You can block the myostatin in your muscles and just keep putting on muscle and get bigger and bigger and stronger. So you're going to have preternaturally fast 400-pound linemen, technically, in college or even high school. And it really does bring the question, as technology pushes us so far beyond our biology, it really does bring us to what is competition. What is fair competition? What does that say about hard work, dedication, ingenuity, smarts? Those are the kinds of things that, you know, when you look, I've met and worked with Magic Johnson. Magic Johnson, if you talk to basketball aficionados, they got him in their All-Star League no matter what team. They got Magic. It's Jordan, and Magic is right there above Bird and all these guys. I met Magic. He's a fucking giant.
Oh, he's 6'9",
right? He's 6'9", but he's also 330.
Yes.
And it's all muscle. If I was that big, I'm pretty athletic. I promise you I would be in the NBA. I promise you I would be. So, you know, and once you get people who are able to grow that big, it's going to be very interesting.
It is.
Yeah.
I mean,
but what do you think about, you teach young children, what do you think of this, and I don't know if it is a trend or it's going away or it's getting, we have these leagues where nobody gets a trophy or everybody gets a trophy. There's no such thing as winner or loser. What do you think of that?
It's tragic in that it sets them up for failure. I mean, imagine the first level where they don't get the trophy now.
Right.
I mean, what's going to happen?
Is this what we're dealing with in California or not?
Oh, it's everywhere.
It is.
It's everywhere.
Who's to blame for that bullshit?
That's a good question.
People that don't live in the real world.
Nobody's listening to this, right? Women.
Yeah. It really?
I think moms got involved.
Moms got involved.
I mean, I don't meet a lot of dads who go, yeah, my kid deserves a trophy for being on a last place soccer team.
No, dads know the difference.
Do you meet a lot of dads that go, yeah, my kid deserves a trophy? Or like in Santa Monica, this is a city where 78% of the little leaguers make the All-Stars. Does that sound like an All-Star team to you?
That's the craziest thing I've ever heard.
Okay, 78%
well,
of the
it's
kids
a lie.
Make
the problem is it's a lie.
Yes,
and I do think it's destructive in that it doesn't teach children how important it is to learn how to lose, and more importantly, how to react to losing, how to take a negative and turn it into a positive. I don't know anyone. I've had a lot of really great people on this podcast, very successful. I got a lot of friends who are very successful. I don't know anyone who has achieved things we all admire, who hasn't done so because they are compensating for something painful or for a certain deficit that they have in their own mind or that is for real. That's crucial for a performance. I've always said that learning how to lose is just as important as learning how to win or more.
I think it's
how,
more important.
Yeah,
how you lose more than you win.
How you react to adversity and how well you maintain your enthusiasm when you're not winning.
Right.
Is the whole deal in this life, this kick in the nuts we call life, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, there aren't too many scenarios in which you win more than you lose. You know, I mean,
how about baseball? If you hit a third of the time, you're in the Hall of Fame.
That's Hall of Fame, you know? And a lot of these, you know, like young tennis players, volleyball players, it's their first loss, you know? Yeah. And what I tell my baseball players is after a loss, I go, we just got better today, you know, because we found out our weaknesses, you know? after you win, very few coaches have a long, you know, 2-hour meeting after a win going over all the stuff you messed up.
Right.
They just go, great win, guys. Da, da, da. You didn't get better that day. You get better from the loss.
Absolutely.
You know? And so,
and, especially if you're
these kids for their losses, and you know, like these soccer leagues that don't keep score.
Wow.
And all this stuff. It's rough, man.
It's not human. I don't believe these kinds of silly trends last. I think that
there's going to be pushback.
It's kind of like communism. We tried making everything communal and you know, everybody is everybody. It's not how human beings are.
And you know, eventually there'll be pushback and they'll start some soccer leagues that, you know, do keep score and advertise. Last place does not get a trophy.
Yeah.
Not everybody's going to make
an
All-Star
team. And I want my kid in that league. There's a lot of parents who, most parents, I would imagine, in this cutthroat world, want their kid in that league. I do.
And I think it's going to swing that way because of Title IX, you know, all these women who've now played college sports.
Oh, yeah.
Once they're, you know, and they're just having kids now.
Mm.
I think that those moms are not going to want last place trophies.
No.
They know that's not
you
the
know,
way to
I
play
had
college sports.
This week on my podcast, Ronda Rousey did it, and she's the UFC champ.
Oh my gosh, she's awesome.
She's awesome, and she's so beautiful.
What a great story.
She's such a badass. And Rhonda, I said to Rhonda, I said, how are you going to raise your daughter? She goes, I'm getting him in sports, I'll tell you that much. Mm-hmm. You know, Rhonda grew up with a world champion judo for
her
mother.
What do you call it, arm lock? What's her signature move?
That's arm bar. She does an
arm bar.
Yeah.
Her mom used to arm bar her.
Well, she'd wake Rhonda up. Rhonda would throw her mom in an arm bar.
That's how you raise a kid.
That's right. And Rhonda said, my mom was a PhD. She was a world champion in judo. I mean, she was just walking around the house. I thought that was the standard. You know, that was the bar.
Are you a fan of Raising Arizona?
Of course.
Remember the scene when that dad chucks those M&Ms at the kid and goes, duck boy.
There you go.
That's a good parent.
That's a damn good parent. That's right. Well, human beings, if there's one thing that history has shown us, is human beings can deal with almost anything.
Absolutely.
I mean, the horrific, you know, the 20th century, just we put more people in their graves in the name of perfecting a human being. But yet, I mean, China under Mao. Mao Zedong was a huge asshole. Oh, and by the way, a fucking mass murderer. Okay, with his forced collectivization where about 40 million people died of famine. He's a great guy. I'm an industrial. Or how about that guy they call Stalin? Not to mention the psychopath Hitler. It's amazing. We're going to perfect and re-education and we're going to kill all the people that make money, et cetera, et cetera. Human beings somehow, we are just resilient.
Absolutely.
We're just able, you know, it's like it's somehow the spirit. Thank God the spirit comes back even stronger.
Right. Especially little kids.
Yeah.
They're so much more resilient. I mean, you look at, you know, the worst thing you can do for a kid who gets hit by a baseball is run up to the batter's box and help him up.
Yeah.
The kid needs to run to first base.
Shake it off.
If it still hurts when you get to first base, then we'll attend to you.
Yeah.
Get up. But these kids, they'll lay there just, you know, until mommy or daddy comes to get them. And I'm not talking about a shot in the face, you know, or anything like that. But if they get hit in the back, they can run to first
base. Yeah, guess what? My son's running to first base.
This is what I promise my kids. By the time you get to first base, it doesn't hurt anymore.
That's right.
You know, like
that
guy who charged Zach Greinke the other night. You know, that guy went to Stanford?
Did he?
That guy went to Stanford.
Somebody broke their collarbone in that brawl, right?
Yeah. And this guy goes to Stanford, and he charges Zach Greinke for hitting him with an 85-mile-an-hour full-count pitch.
Right.
It's like, you know, sometimes emotions just take over, but man, just get over it.
Get over it, bro.
This is a kid whose mom probably picked him up out of the batter's box every time he got hit by a pitch or something.
What did you think of Roger Clemens? He seemed like a big fat baby.
You know what? I saw the 60 Minutes piece. I was convinced. He convinced me that he didn't do steroids.
I think he did do steroids. I don't mind that he did steroids. I never care. Look, Lance Armstrong, I don't give a shit if you do steroids. What I hate is if you do steroids, somebody accuses you of doing steroids, or somebody doesn't want to lie about it, and then you try to ruin their life. That's what I hate. That's what I have a problem with.
Oh, you mean him going after his trainer?
Yeah, that's shit. You know,
Well, let's flip that around. How about you're a personal trainer?
Mm.
He's paying him a ton of money to be his personal trainer.
Right.
Isn't there a little code of silence that goes along
always,
with
always? But I think his trainer was under deposition. I think his trainer was actually, still, you know, the code. Yeah, I agree, dude. I agree. I would have to say, you got to
your
keep,
time.
You got to keep That's your the fucking risk mouth
take.
Shut.
That's the risk
Listen,
you take for
my mother. Him. My mother's 100% Sicilian, bro. So I got in trouble because I told her my sister, and my sister got in trouble, and then I got in trouble for being a tattletale. So I adhere 100%.
As your trainer is injecting you in the ass with the steroids, yep. You have to say, you know, you could go to jail for this, right?
It's called the vault. I was just on Joe Rogan's podcast, and one of the greatest compliments he ever gave me is he goes, "Brian's the guy I would call if I had to hide a body." You fucking right, I would, bro. I'll take a risk for you. He's my boy.
Yeah, but you know, I mean, Clemens, that's an interesting case because it's so open and shut with all the hitters. Mm. You just know the hitters that did it and didn't do it, but with the pitchers, it's a completely different ball game.
Yeah,
you know. And this was a guy who worked his ass off.
Well, nobody trained like Clemens. He worked out.
He was like Steve Carlton. You know, yeah. I mean, he was a beast. And then, you know, I think that, you know, the whole crux of the case was they proved that steroids were delivered to his house. He said they were for his wife. And if you've ever seen his wife, she looked like she was on roids.
She's tough.
She had guns.
Well, you got to, I mean, listen.
She had guns.
She had to keep up with that guy.
Don't they have like six sons or something?
Yeah.
It could have been for anybody.
Listen,
in that
God
house.
Bless. Maybe, you know, listen, if your wife's going to look better and, you know, I don't know. I think it's a tough issue. And I think ultimately you've got to enforce that law because athletes will do whatever it takes in the short run.
Yeah. I mean,
and like you said, you got kids
at the end of their career.
You don't think high school kids will be doing it if they can get ahead?
You know, and there's all these stats about high school kids doing steroids. I don't see it.
No,
I'm not. And I'm not just talking about my kids at Santa Monica. Right. We play against a bunch of other kids. Yeah, some of them are big, but they're not. I don't see anybody roiding out.
You can tell.
Out.
Yeah.
Now college. Maybe.
Yeah.
You know, college, but and certainly the minor leagues.
College, if their dad isn't driving them to the games and stuff. I mean, you know, it's hard to get. You don't have money.
Right.
Where are you going to get the money for steroids?
Yeah. I mean, and the kids, you know, they're actually scared of that health risk.
Right.
I don't know what they're teaching them, but they're actually scared.
Well, they should
about
be.
It.
They're still developing. You
Absolutely.
Know? I mean, you know, that's the bottom line. How did you get into teaching kindergarten?
Right out of college, I started designing video games for Sony. And then, great job. I mean, the greatest job in the world.
Do you play video games?
A huge gamer.
You're a huge,
huge gamer. All through college.
What are your games?
Well, now I have kids. I mean, I don't get to play at all. I just watch them play their Xbox games, you know, their Call of Duty and stuff like that. But I was a huge gamer in college.
Wait, before you go into that, I want to hear this. You're an educator. Mm-hmm. What do you think of video games?
Do you mean the violence?
Well, how much is too much? The violence? Does it actually cause violence?
Video games, it's exactly like watching TV. There's no differentiation. You know, if you're going to let your kid watch 3 hours of TV a day, it doesn't matter if he's watching TV or playing video games. So I don't see any differentiation between TV and video games. Now, the video games...
So in other words, video games are not addictive in the sense that TV...
No more than TV is.
They
I'm
are.
Addicted to TV.
Okay. Oh,
I watch about 7 hours a day. My kids go to sleep, okay, from 9 p.m. till 2 a.m.
Right.
I watch, and thanks to TiVo, I watch 9 hours of TV in, 5 or 6 hours.
That's hilarious.
I just pound through the TV. So I'm unbelievably addicted to TV, watched it my entire life, 8 hours a day, full on, get home. It was like, you know, all in the family, me and my family just sitting in the room, all staring at the TV.
Brings them together.
but then, you know, I don't think video games are necessarily bad for kids. There are some benefits like eye-hand coordination and... You know, if you've tried to play video games now, there are so many freaking buttons.
There's a lot of problem solving
going on and stuff like that. Now, as far as the violence,
it's even physical, isn't it? I mean,
I mean, it's really complex.
And these kinds
it's not Pac-Man. You know, it's not just one little dot munching other dots anymore. It's very strategic. Now, as far as violence, I don't think they make you violent, but they definitely make you a better killer.
I was going to say
all those kids that go on rampages.
Yeah.
They've done it a million times.
Well, that's why these kids are. That's why they're getting headshots.
You just nailed it. Yeah. It makes them a better killer.
Yeah.
If they've played all these Call of Duty games, and it desensitizes
them. That's my feeling. If you're a sociopath to begin with, and you're
it's not going to turn you into a sociopath.
But if you have a fucked up brain to begin with, you play video games and you snap one day, you're going to be better. You're going to get more headshots, God forbid. Right. Sorry to be so crude.
And it's the same thing. You know, these kids could be going out and playing paintball and getting the exact same experience and increasing their killing skills. But instead, they do it for 8 hours a day in their basement and become very good and very efficient at it. And, you know, that Lanza kid in Yorktown and stuff like that.
So
I mean,
that must
have fucked
you
up.
I mean, you teach kids that age.
It's
we haven't talked about that.
It's just, it's incomprehensible
to me. It's incomprehensible. But you teach, you are a kindergarten teacher.
It's absolutely.
And this happened. So this must have, what went through your head?
That this person was so insane. You know, it's like when you hear about Jeffrey Dahmer, you know, cutting up his, you know, it's at that level.
Yeah.
You know, it's not Columbine, you know.
No, it's not.
Columbine, those dudes were bullied. I mean, of course, I'm not justifying what they did,
but they
were bullied.
One of the kids, actually, the guy who wrote the book said, the one kid, I think Eric, what is his name? He was actually just a sociopath. He was a sadistic sociopath. Mm-hmm. He had a long history of doing horrific things. The other kid was suicidal and very, very depressed, and he used that kid as a tool. So it's actually an interesting book.
There you go.
Yeah, but anyway, I'm sorry. But I just realized you are a kindergarten teacher.
Unbelievable. Yeah. I mean, just, and you know, and now, ever since then, now we have all these, you know, experts coming to campus telling us how to deal with this. And you
what
know,
do they say? What do you do?
You move away from it. It's like the old school, you know, would say, stay in your classroom and hunker down.
No, get the fuck out.
But now it's like, if you hear about a shooter on your campus, the loudspeaker, you know, person on the loudspeaker is supposed to tell you where they are. Like loudspeaker, you know, shooter
in the
West Wing.
Unless they've been
shooter
killed.
But they're going to try to tell you where the
was
the
there ever
is?
Any discussion in your classroom about actually having guns available? Did you
no,
think about it?
I don't think we're anywhere near that in California. Yeah. You know, as far as arming teachers,
I think it's a dumb idea.
It's insane.
Yeah,
and same with putting security guards.
They're going to shoot the security guard.
That's right. Yeah. Isn't that what they did?
The first guy they're going to shoot is the security guard.
It's not going to save anything. But as far as arming teachers, I think that they've pretty much proven that anybody with a gun in their house is three times more likely to use it on somebody.
It's not just that. You know, these idiots who say this, you have to be trained to use a gun, and you have to be inoculated to combat stress. Mm-hmm. Okay? When somebody's shooting an AR-15 close to you, it's so loud. And when you're watching people splatter in front of you and stuff, you go into flight. You don't know what to do. People freeze up all the time. You can't expect somebody who's an educator who doesn't train in this stuff every day.
Because you took them to a range for 3 hours and taught them how shoot a pistol. You think that they're going to defend a school?
Cops, SWAT guys freeze up. That's why they have to go through stress inoculation. They have to go through the training. Yeah. And they have to keep doing it, by the way.
Right.
And even that's not a guarantee.
It's just, I mean, the very thought of arming teachers, it's just, it's pretty laughable.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, you'd be much better investing in better locks on the doors, you know, and buzzing, you know, buzzer systems that are just not, you know, get past one person and you have full access to the school.
Right.
Or
and by
like
the way,
that.
It's so rare. This guy, Adam Lanza, is such an insane human being that's all we've been talking about. I mean, it's so rare
and so crazy
and so horrific that it's,
even metal detectors. I mean,
you don't change school policy and your life because of one craze.
Right. It's going to take a lot more than that. I mean, otherwise we're going to end up, you know, because we don't want the schools to feel like prisons.
Did it change your point of view on gun control? Are you anti-gun to begin with?
No, you know, I mean, ultimately, there's only one thing that would fix the gun control issue, and that's a time machine. To go back and stop the manufacture of guns.
Yeah, that's right.
But at this point, you know, I'm by no means pro-gun, but at this point, making guns illegal.
300 million guns out there.
Yeah, I mean, what are you going to do? You know, these little systems where you have people turn in their guns voluntarily and stuff. Well, guess who's not going to turn in their guns voluntarily? Criminals.
Yeah, that's right.
I mean, so, you know, it's one of those things that we've gotten down this path. You know, we're not going to flip it around. You know, it'd be great if we could go back in time and change it.
Yeah.
But I think,
I would like background checks on the certain, you know, a lot of gun, if you have a gun show, and if you're not federally licensed, you don't have to be. If you're, I think, if you have a gun show, if you people can just walk in and buy a gun. You right. actually don't need a background check. I think that's a problem. I think you should, if you have a history of domestic abuse or mental instability, I think we should know about that, and I actually don't think you should have a gun.
Right.
I'd rather those people, you know, criminals, people who have had a history of violent behavior, impulsive behavior, psychotic behavior, call me crazy. I'd rather they didn't have a gun.
Right.
I'd rather, you know, law-abiding citizens can buy a gun. Absolutely. And all I'm asking is a background check. If I want to rent an apartment or adopt a dog, I fucking have to go through a background check.
Right.
It's not an infringement on my liberty. Right. I'm a libertarian. It's just common sense. The reason we don't sell poisonous snakes without a very special license is why? Because it ensures public safety. Right. Otherwise, you got a bunch of fucking poisonous snakes in California, like cobras and vipers. I don't want that in my backyard. Right. It's crazy. I don't want them multiplying.
Call me crazy.
Yeah, call me crazy. So you got to have a license. It's just public safety. Right. I'm not infringing on your fucking freedoms. I'm just asking for a background check so crazy people don't get their gun. That's all.
And you know, like those 30-round mags.
Probably. Well, and my argument about that, too, is that, you know, people say, well, it's an infringement. Okay. Well, how come then, why don't we have fully automatic weapons and hand grenades and sell tanks? Why won't we do that? You know why we don't do that? You can buy those. Need a very special license. Mm-hmm. Got to be qualified by a state or federal authority. Mm-hmm. There's a reason for that. There's a reason for that. Right. There is a limit on lethality. We're not going to sell just anybody machine guns. Hand grenades. Why? It's called public safety, the public good. So we do have restrictions on what you can buy and what you can't. I guess some people in the NRA say anybody should be able to buy whatever they want. But
Second Amendment.
That's fine, but just a background check, please. Right. Just a background check. And please, a special license for hand grenades and missile launchers. That's all. I'm a libertarian. I'm an American. Does that make me a communist?
How dare you, sir?
Yeah, does that
how
make me a communist?
How dare you?
Am I against the Constitution?
How dare you infringe on my right to shoot down an airplane?
Right. Go fuck. Yeah, exactly. I can't have a surface-to-air missile. I'm a good guy. Well, I don't want to fly. I don't want to fly with a city that allows civilians a surface-to-air missile. I know it's crazy, man, because I know a lot of drunk idiots, and they get pissed off. Fuck you. My wife cheated on me. Let's see what happens to the 747.
That's right.
No, because it would happen. It would happen.
Oh, it's going to.
Yeah.
No doubt.
It would. Yeah. How do you deal as a parent? How do you deal with a child who loses a sibling or a parent? How do you handle that?
Man, that's rough. You know, I think I've been lucky enough in my career to never, let's see. I don't remember ever having a kid lose a parent while they were under my watch.
Wow. Lucky.
Yeah. And therapy, I guess. I mean, you know, that it's just, yeah, I'll tell you what, you don't want the teacher really handling it too much.
How do you explain that? That's one of my advices
for most parents is that I think a lot, you know, like your friend said, the parents stink nowadays.
Yeah.
I think for some reason in the last 20 years, there's been a shift to schools from educating my kid to raising my kid.
Mm.
Like, why am I teaching kids about, you know, morals and stuff like that? Stuff that used to be done in the home, you know, now we're teaching them morality at school and bullying and all this stuff where that used to be taken care of by the parents.
What about bullying? Is this media hype?
It's media hype. I mean, were you bullied?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I learned how to fight.
Yeah. What do you think the best cure for a bully is?
To get his ass kicked.
Yes. It's a punch in the nose.
Yeah.
It's how you cure a bully.
Right.
You know, but again, same thing with this, you know, participation trophy generation is we've come up with this use your words generation. Okay. Use your words. Use your words. Use your words.
I got a great story for
Guess
you.
What the bully wants you to do? Use your words.
Right.
I mean, what I have to tell my kids, my sons, as a teacher and a parent are the exact opposite.
Right.
As a teacher, I need to say, use your words, dude. You know, don't put your hands on anybody.
Right.
Okay. As a parent, you take them aside and you say,
before you even say hello to this kid, punch him in the nose and see if he ever bothers you again. Right. I promise you, son, he won't even make eye contact with you for the rest of your
Kurt,
life.
You are an educator. This is outrageous. This is Kurt the civilian, everybody, not the teacher.
I do have an identical twin brother. I can
you
blame this on.
You have an identical twin brother. But, you know, isn't that so male, and isn't that so honest, and isn't that the way it goes? I mean, I remember I was an adult, and there was a certain actor or comedian, whatever, who was a bully to people and was scaring people because he had enough power to kind of get you, not the job or banned from a club or whatever. And you know, somebody's like, "Don't talk to him." I said, "Listen, bro. I said if he ever did that to me, I'd beat his ass. Like I would, or if I couldn't, we'd still be in a fight.
Right.
I'd go up to him and I go, "Hey, bro, if you ever do that to me, I'm going to beat you up, or we're going to fight. We'll go outside and we'll just mix it up." Mm-hmm. There is a wonderful thing about that with men. And I grew up knowing I wasn't the toughest guy because I was an athlete. I did enough sports to know how tough I'm not.
Right.
One of the great things about being a wrestler or whatever it might be, or doing a little or combat sports, whether it's martial arts, you learn very quickly that dude over there who's built like your gardener can wreck your whole world.
Right.
So learn respect with everybody. Don't think you're a better athlete because you're a little taller or you have broader shoulders or you're a little more cut or whatever.
Right.
You don't know. So I've always been very respectful of the way I present myself and behave, because I don't know.
Right.
I don't know. I've paid a price for that when I was a kid. I learned quickly, right?
And, you know, it's the same thing with baseball. You know, baseball used to police itself.
Mm-hmm.
Like Don Drysdale used to say publicly, if the other team hits one of my teammates,
I'm hitting
two.
That's
okay. So what happened
and you
was
could, you would see
if
it.
You were playing the Dodgers and the card, if it's Dodgers Cardinals and a Cardinal hits a Dodger, that guy goes up to the Cardinal pitcher and goes, "You just got me beamed by Don Drysdale on my next at bat, dude. Don't hit anybody today."
That's right.
You know, and it's like hockey. You know, that some people want to take the fighting out of hockey.
No.
You take the fighting out
We're
of hockey.
We're not going to watch it.
That's going to be a major problem because the sport, it's allowed to police itself.
Of course.
But nowadays, you know.
You know, it's the same thing as
you can't tell kids to throw at other kids. And, you know, you tell them to throw inside, but you can't tell them, you know, "Oh, hey, that guy just hit your teammate."
Right.
You know, you got to take him out.
Well, it goes back to, you know, the next guy on my podcast is a guy named Stoney Curtis. He's a famous porn director and very colorful guy with just amazing stories. And Stoney said, "We don't need a condom law. We police ourselves. We know that when we shoot a scene, actors know that they don't want to catch chlamydia, gonorrhea, yes, etc., syphilis."
Isn't it funny that they would make that law as if
they get tested
want to
every week.
AIDS,
no.
As if
right.
I mean,
there's been one AIDS case, and it was from a tranny who had sex in. Oh, he was a guy who had sex with a tranny in Brazil. One, and they shut themselves down.
And didn't the law just like make him move from the valley to Camarillo?
Yeah,
or something.
Well, they'll just move. They're going to Nevada.
Oh, okay. They will go out of the state. Yeah. But
well,
wasn't it real regional?
That condom law is so ridiculous because if you're a married couple and you shoot yourself having sex and then you sell it, you have to wear a condom. That's where you take the law to the next step. So
are you telling me I need to get on eBay tonight
and
take all my videos down?
You've got to take all your videos down, brother.
My
it's going to interfere with. Well, by the way, wasn't there a porn star or a woman who was doing porn, but she was also teaching eighth grade?
Yes. That's interesting.
That is interesting.
And I think she was former porn.
Yes. Well, like some of the kids saw her.
It's like... That's a tough
Which, by the way, turned me on.
That's a tough one. Remember what I said about getting the kids' attention?
Yeah, I was going to say.
I think you got half the class taken care of there.
Right.
She's probably the best teacher on campus.
Well, right, Alana Evans, who's a famous porn star, did my podcast, and she has a kid in high school. And everybody in high school knows what she does, and she never kept it a secret. And you know what? Now they're over it. Now they're like, "Well, I guess she's fucking your mom, the fucking bangs guys." You know,
I mean,
or I guess it's his stepmom.
That's interesting. At what point are we going to start background checking what these people did before
You know, like,
yeah.
what if it was a baseball, but you know, what if Mark McGuire wants to come coach high school baseball?
Yeah.
Should we not allow him? That's way worse than doing porn.
Well, but you know, we live in a puritanic, so yeah. We all watch porn, but no. You know, I don't know where I'm so liberal with this stuff and I watch porn, but I don't know where I stand on this. I don't know that I want a porn star teaching my children. Call me crazy, okay. But I'm very protective of my kids. My buddy Stoney Curtis, who directs porn, he doesn't want his kids knowing that what he does.
Is it the proximity to drugs, you think?
No, because a lot of nowadays porn's kind of competitive and people don't last long. There's not as many drugs at all. I've talked to a lot of people in the business. I think it's just that there's something about doing it publicly. My theory on it is this. Look, you're in LA. If you're a single guy, single girl, we all know people who've slept with more than 10, 12, 30, 40 people, you know, in a year.
Uh-huh.
People get active. It's a lot of fun, whatever. Okay.
They're called successful. Okay.
That's right. They're called successful. A lot of actors and actresses are sleeping with a lot of people every year. And boy, would I like to be a fly on that wall. Yes. We all know this. We all talk about it. We all envy it. We all see this stuff. I think that where the reservation comes is when you see people having sex on camera for all to see, there's also this notion, well, they must be a little mentally unstable. That's, I think, where the fear comes in.
So you'd be fine with a stripper.
I'd be fine with a stripper in any context.
Okay, so that's where your slippery slope ends.
Well,
is
no, I don't know.
Stripper and porn star?
Probably.
Because it's not like on YouTube for the kids to go home and see.
I probably, honestly, because I've known a lot of, because they all, I know them from comedy. They come to the Comedy Store. You get to know these people. Mm-hmm. I got to tell you, I don't, like, for example, my friend Alana Evans. I know Alana well. Alana is a good person. She's in a lot of ways, very stable person. I've never seen anything about. She's 35, and she's somebody who is not. She's not a psycho. She's not a bad human being. I think she's probably a nympho, and she'd agree mm-hmm. with that. So she just loves having sex with grown men.
Right.
But she wouldn't expose children to that shit.
Right.
My buddy Stoney Curtis, who directs porn and made a fortune, would never expose children to porn. He doesn't want his kids anywhere near that. So that's what's interesting. I mean, Stoney is really conservative. He's right. Actually way more conservative than I am when it comes to children, when it comes to what children can be exposed to, how they should be taught. And yet he directs porn. Yet he is in as deep into porn as it gets. So therein lies the insane rub. I don't know. I don't want to be a relativist. I do think that you have to have standards. I understand people who are appalled by it. I get it. I respect it. It's just that when you're close to it, you know, it's never as evil. When you're involved in it, it's never as evil and mysterious as it is.
Okay,
know?
Now I'm going to ask you a question. You ready for the tables to be turned?
Yes, sir.
What was it like to be on Oz?
Oh, right. You like that. That's right. That was your favorite show. Well, I'll tell you.
Wait, let's back up.
Yeah.
Tell me why I watched that show. Probably, tell me why anybody watched that show.
Probably because you never knew what lengths they were going to go, where J.K. Simmons takes a where Lee Turkson takes a shit on J.K. Simmons' face.
What was the table
He's
read
the
like?
All-star state
What was the table read like? Wait, who is pooping Farmers in my mouth now?
yeah, exactly.
He's doing what now?
Yeah, I think that we wanted to see just how dark Tom Fontana would go. And we all love that. It's like, we'll watch anything. You know?
I mean, I don't
Fucked
know.
By a horse? What?
For all you those know? Years, I was addicted to that show, and it gave me horrible Schillinger nightmares.
Oh,
I mean, horrible.
I know.
Horrible nightmares.
Yeah.
And I kept watching it.
I know.
And I don't know for the life of me.
Part of it's also probably that you just don't know how you would survive in that circumstance.
Yeah.
Is it
one of those, what would I do in that situation?
Well, you know, we shot it in the where the Oreo was invented, in the old Nabisco cookie factory.
Okay.
On 17th and I think 8th.
Was this in New York?
New York City.
And a lot of these guys were Broadway. I mean,
oh,
these
yeah.
were
most
amazing actors.
Oh, yeah, great actors.
These
J.K.
were
Simmons is a song and dance man.
Insanely talented actors.
Lee Turkson, I mean, Dean Winters, they're all great actors. I mean, Chris Maloney, I mean, it goes on and on. But my roommate, I shared a dressing room with Chuck Zito, who was at the time president of the Hell's Angels. His friends would come down, these giant outlaws, these gigantic, muscular outlaws. I've never felt like a bigger pussy in my life.
Now, tell everybody what you were on the show.
I was Charles Cushane. I think that was my name. And I was the leader of the Christians. What a bore. What a bore. Yeah, it was not much went on for me. But yeah, man, I remember just trying to have something in common with Chuck, who's a great guy. But I was like, he was talking about his, I said, what'd you do? He went to jail for 7 years. I go, what'd you do the day you came back? He came out. He goes, what'd I do the day I came out? I took out my 57 Chevy and I polished it. Oh. And I go, I've never seen a 57 Chevy. He goes, you don't know what a 57 Chevy is? I go, no. He goes, what the fuck? And he pulls out a huge picture of it. And I was like, I'm such a loser.
Did he say the show was pretty realistic?
You know, I never really talked about it. You know, Chuck was a guy we were kind of all in awe of because he was such a—he was a real deal outlaw.
He was the real
deal. And he was also bigger than all of us and stronger.
Beast of a man.
That's that guy.
Never wore a shirt.
Yeah, he's a badass. Chuck Zito's a badass. Chuck Zito will knock you out. Yes. He's a good guy. He's a good person, but don't fuck around with him. Mm-hmm. Don't underestimate what he is and where he came from. If you treat him like a gentleman, he'll treat you like a gentleman. You want to fucking jump around like a little froggy, he's going to flatten you. And I love the guy. I just hung out with him recently at the Rainbow Room in Sunset, and it was great. He's just a great guy. I think he's on Sons of Anarchy now,
yeah.
Which is, I think, was his life. I mean, it was kind of like his story.
Well, I'm addicted to that show now.
Yeah.
So clearly there's something
I hear it's
in
a great
me.
Show.
It's fantastic.
I got to see that.
Now, it's not nearly as brutal as Oz,
yeah.
But it's brutal.
Right.
I mean, it's brutal, but you think back... And you just go, man, Oz was just, right. There's nothing else like
right.
it.
Right.
And for the, you know, I mean, here's this, you know, I think it was right after Sex and the City. And I'd be like, what?
Right.
How am I watching this show?
It was, wasn't it? I think it was right after Sex. And now for a prison drama. Girls chatting and now a prison drama. I did that show too, by the way. Let me ask you this. I interrupted you because we got off video games, and I interrupted you because you were talking about how you got into teaching kindergarten.
Right.
You started designing video games.
I'm designing video games for Sony. My greatest job in the world, and I realized I was not built to be in a cubicle until 5 o'clock.
Okay.
Like, this, it just wasn't happening. And I thought back to my UCLA days, and even more than playing baseball at UCLA, you know what I really loved? Working the summer camps.
Mm.
Where, you know, we got paid $8 an hour, you know, which to us back in college seemed like, you know, we were rich at the end of the day. But it was working with the kids. And I found out early on that I just had a voice the kids listened to. You know, I can whistle on any playground in America and get 50 kids to line up right in front of me. It's just a gift I have.
That's great.
And I really do have an identical twin brother, and he's a fourth grade teacher.
Oh, you do have an identical fourth. And he's a fourth grade
he's
teacher.
He's a fourth grade teacher in Hawaii at Barack Obama's school, Punahou.
Wow.
So he's at, you know, I'm at one of the best schools on the mainland, and he's at the best school in Hawaii. And we just have this gift that we can speak to kids on their level, you know, kind of like a Miss Doubtfire thing going on, where we don't speak down to them. I'm not like, okay, boys and girls, please do this. I just go, hey, guys, it's time to clean up. And they just do it, you know. So knowing that I loved kids, I was actually in the video game business, and it was back in the Mortal Kombat days when all anybody was making was extremely violent video games. And not only was I not built to be in a cubicle until 5 o'clock, I had no interest in these fighting video games. Mm. And I was trying to convince Sony to make these educational games, and they had no interest, none.
Mm.
Maybe they were right to, maybe they wouldn't have sold, who knows. But that's when I decided to go back to Pepperdine and get my master's in education. And at the same time I got an MBA because I didn't know what I wanted to do. And then boom, I get a student teaching job right down the street here at Franklin, and 17 years later.
I just fell in love with it.
It was like,
well, it's such you
so
are
meant
living.
For it.
It's such
so
an
meant for
right,
it.
It's such an amazing community, by the way. I mean, the parents love you. I know that.
It's such a great community.
Yeah.
And it's such a good school too. I mean, I'm lucky that even though, you know, we are union and stuff like that, the teachers at the school, like at the end of the year, we put on a big talent show, you know, all the teachers for, you know, just for the kids and for the parents. Last year we did Spam-A-Lot. This year we're doing Saturday Night Live.
Wow.
I mean, I work with an amazing bunch of teachers, an amazing group of kindergarten teachers. And 17 years later, I'm the number two senior teacher on that campus.
It's crazy.
You know, and I,
you know, I got 15, 20 more years.
Well, you've been recognized too as being, you know, teacher.
I won an NBC Crystal Apple Award, and I'm Google certified, and won all these different awards and stuff. So I've been very lucky.
Yeah, you were like a celebrity when you got up to speak. There was just this general rumble among these parents, like, oh, there he is.
I've been there for a while, and like I said, you know, my curriculum, it's really out there. You know, I it's called Rock and Roll Kindergarten. Uh-huh. Can I plug something?
Yes.
rockandrollkindergarten.com. But that's just my website where I share for free my curriculum with all
I'm
the teachers
in
the country.
That's important.
And then I've started this grassroots movement called Occupy Kindergarten. So I have a TED Talk on YouTube. Yeah, I got a TED Talk.
I love
called,
TED.
Look it up. It's called Occupy Kindergarten. And it's just basically my entire philosophy about, you know, we got to bring the fun back to kindergarten. Because what they've done over the last 10, 20 years is the kindergarten that I teach is the first grade that you and I attended. The reading that I'm having to teach these kids used to be first grade, and they've pushed it down, and they've basically said, if you're not reading by the end of kindergarten, there's a problem.
What is the rush?
What is the rush?
What is the fucking rush?
What is the rush? And that's the whole thing about Occupy Kindergarten, is that it says, let's just be the kid, let the kids be the kids again. You know, what is the difference between a second grader who can read and a third grader can read? Why do we have to make them read earlier? What's the purpose for it? Because there's a definite cost. And that cost is the kids not liking reading because it's too early.
It's too
you know,
early.
I mean, some of the kids aren't ready for it.
Right.
You know, and what are we teaching them by shut? You know, I could teach my kids algebra if I wanted to. Doesn't mean I should.
Right.
You know, it's just going to make them not like it later. So until somebody can convince me of what is the rush, why do kindergartners have to read? Why do they have to do all these worksheets? Why do they have to do all this stuff? Why can't it just be about fun? Because what's getting pushed out of kindergarten? Socialization.
Wow.
You know, when you and I went to kindergarten, it was probably mostly choice time and playing and stuff like that. Now it's so academic, you wouldn't even recognize it.
Why did that happen?
Well, the state standards, for some reason, it's the bureaucrats. It's the people who are outside the classroom wanting to push it down. Like if you watch, what was it? The Masters. Every commercial break was sponsored by Exxon, and Exxon has started this "Let's Solve This" campaign where they want to fix American education because we're so low in the rankings. If you've ever seen the rankings, the international education rankings, in math and science, we're behind Slovenia. Are you intimidated by Slovenia?
No, I'm not.
You know, I mean, we're like 17th in reading and 18th.
We're
in
also
science.
Still the hotbed of innovation. There's still a huge part of America that
can
works.
Can you hand me your Slovenian iPad
that's sitting
right next to you?
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
It's like, why are we worried about all these other countries that are just faking their scores, not taking the same tests as us? Do you trust the scores that come out of China?
No, I don't.
Why would you?
No, I don't.
Why?
And
you
when
know,
was the
in
last
some...
time you bought a Chinese car or
right.
any other Chinese product that wasn't where the idea didn't start in this country?
Do we export our jobs to India, our computer jobs, to India because they're better programmers? Or is it because they work for 30 cents on the dollar?
That's exactly right.
You know, I mean, same thing with China. Are we exporting all that work over to China because they can build iPads better? No, it's because they can build it for 5 cents an hour.
That's right.
These are not education issues. These are economic issues.
Labor issues, yeah.
But people like Exxon look at it like it's a problem with our education system. And so they've started this "Let's Solve This" campaign. And so what's coming down the pipeline are these Common Core standards, which are going to get all the states on the same standards. And it's pushing the standards down, making sure all the kids are reading at the end of kindergarten, and making, you know, basically going to push the letters and sounds down to preschool. And then, you know, when are these kids getting socialized?
It's amazing.
When are they learning to share?
Right.
When are they learning to play nice with others and all that stuff that Robert Fulghum talked about in All I Ever Needed to Know I Learned in Kindergarten?
Great book.
None of that stuff is any of the state standards anymore, you know? So there's a definite cost to it, and that's the future.
Is it going
to
come back, or is it?
That's what Occupy Kindergarten is. You know, I'm trying to push it back.
Have
and
you
I've
thought
got,
about writing a book?
Yeah, I'm working on it, and I've got thousands and thousands of kindergarten teachers with me.
Wow.
Like, the pushback will come from us.
Okay.
It's gonna come from us saying, no, we're going to have fun. Yeah, we'll teach to your little standards, but we're going to reserve an hour and a half a day for our choice and stuff like
that. I want
that.
That's what I got from your class.
Yeah. You know, and then there are creative teachers like me along the way who can combine the two, who can combine bowling and the Common Core standards and stuff like that. So it's really going to take the pushback from us because
you guys are using computers more and more too, right?
Absolutely. You know, like the iPad, That's revolutionary.
Is
that's
it really?
Going to change education.
Why?
It's
just,
it's so many more touches. Hmm. Like the iPad enables the kids who would normally be doing a math assignment with little plastic teddy bears on the table, in the same time that they can do 10 of those math problems with the teddy bears, they can do 50 on the iPad. You know, it's just, wow. It's going to change everything. You know, it's the iPad's going to eliminate the need for 40-pound backpacks for our junior high school kids.
It's so true.
You know?
I mean, you got all your books on there, right?
Could you imagine, you know, your textbook being updated like that?
Well, I listen to courses. It's so crazy. The teaching company is this company that I listen to courses on tape. I love doing it when I drive. And I, you know, now I can digitally download 34 lectures on my iPhone.
Isn't it nuts?
It's crazy.
And that's the whole thing about that. You know, the smartphone is that you could become an expert on a plane ride.
Yeah, that's right.
It's like you could really sign up to give a lecture on, you know, some, you know, physics or something.
Yeah.
And by the time you land at MIT, you're an expert.
That's right. Well, again, you were talking about how when we have, since we do have everything at our fingertips information-wise, it still doesn't, it seems to me that the attention now should be on creativity.
Absolutely.
That's what matters. Ideas and creativity, ingenuity, make turning something out of nothing is really where we should be pushing our children. That is the American way anyway.
Absolutely.
You know?
Absolutely. And that's what they call project-based learning. My brother does a lot of this in Hawaii, is that he's done away with all his math workbooks, okay? And he's just got a wall that looks like Home Depot with all, you know, protractors and stuff like that. And he's basically said, if you're not using one of these tools up on the wall to solve your math problem, it's probably not a math problem you need.
Wow.
You know? So it's going to be all project-based. It's going to be instead of, let's learn how to, you know, multiply instead of the times tables. Mm. You're just going to start out figuring out the square footage of this rug.
So you want to lay a rug down.
You know, like, you know, and all this, you know, instead of subtraction, you're going to learn making change.
Utility.
Yeah, it's utility.
It is the industrial sciences. We have lost something for that, you know?
Right.
We'd probably cut down on traffic and everything else. I mean, you know, if people...
Absolutely.
If people worked locally and knew how to, you know, keep up with the computer technology in a car or mm-hmm. something like that, there you're right.
Yeah. I mean, you think about, again, you know, going back to all the life skills that we're pumping these kids out of high school that they don't have anymore. You know, like, seriously, I can't change the oil in my car.
Right.
You know, and I have 2 master's degrees and went to UCLA and was an honor student in high school.
I have a planter. I have a planter out there, and I was realizing I have no idea how to grow anything. Right. I can't grow a tomato. Like, I just sprayed some water on it. I was like, oh, fucking hope this works out.
I will pay somebody to come to my house and fix my toilet, you know, and it's just what about these skills? You know, you think about all these skills, you know, I would get more out of, if somebody had given me a knitting class in high school, mm-hmm. I would have gotten more out of that than calculus.
Right.
You know, I didn't become an astronaut, you know, but it would have been pretty cool to knit something.
And the math person will find calculus.
Right. Yeah. I'm not saying eliminate calculus. No. I'm just saying, if they don't want to do it, once we identify that these kids are not on that path, which we can do a lot earlier than we're doing, is let's stop forcing it down their throats.
Have you ever fantasized? I mean, you know, on Andre Agassi and Steffi Graf started a school in Vegas for underprivileged mm-hmm. children. And it was a huge part of that book. And I was so obsessed with it. And I've always fantasized about going into a place where kids don't have access to great education and just opening these great schools.
Yeah.
How realistic is that? Why isn't that done by philanthropists more and more?
That's a good question. You know, they're trying to do that everywhere. And one of the main drawbacks is the data. It's very hard to secure the hard data that they're really doing a good job because it takes so long.
Right.
You know, this is not a 1-year turnaround. Yeah. Any
but how do you start
in.
A school? You can start a private school. Do you need to go through a whole bunch of state stuff?
It's a lot easier than you think. Like all these little private schools in Santa Monica that are riddled through. It's basically a business license because, and you know, you'll get inspected from time to time, just like a daycare center or something like that. But, you know, a lot of private school teachers, they don't have requirements.
That's what I heard.
Like, you know, some of the best private schools here are not necessarily, the teachers don't have teaching credentials.
That's what I've heard.
They might have PhDs,
but
they don't have a degree in education. Now, there's an upside and a downside to teaching a private school. The upside is that you probably get people who might be a little bit more experts in their area.
Right. Okay.
What you get a lot less of, first of all, is The private school teachers are not paid as well as the public school teachers.
They're not.
They're not. They usually make 2/3 of what the public school teachers are, because the public school teachers are usually with the kids all day.
Right.
Like your fourth grade teacher is with your kids 6 hours, 7 hours a day. Private school, you ship the kids out for PE. You ship them out for music. You ship them out for computer. You ship them out for art.
You teach
and you're
one
basically
thing.
Just the math and you know, reading teacher.
Gotcha.
Or something like that.
Gotcha.
So you're paying these people a lot less. A lot of times they're less qualified. But here's the good thing. No union.
Yeah.
If they get caught with their feet up on the desk, they can get fired that day.
Yeah.
You know, as opposed to it taking 3 years to fire somebody.
Right.
You know, so there's a lot of pluses and minuses to the private schools. But you know, like we were talking about before, is, you know, a lot of people look at the private schools and go, oh, their test scores are so much higher. Yeah, because they weeded out the bottom quarter of the general population.
Right.
You know, I mean, any public school, you take out the bottom quarter, you know, or you make an application process and you find out, you know, this kid's going to bring our average down. They're not getting in.
Right.
You know, so it's not that the private school teachers are better. It's just the kids come in so much more advanced, and then they could kick them out halfway through if they're lagging.
Huh?
You know, so they have all these advantages that the public schools don't.
That's amazing. I never thought of that. Yeah. I heard that. I didn't know that was true.
Oh, absolutely.
That's wild.
Absolutely.
Well, we've talked 34 minutes over what I usually do, which means you're a very interesting guest, my friend.
We beat Jay Moore.
We did, but I could talk to you all night. Finally, Mr. Schwengel, Kurt Schwengel of Franklin Elementary School, or I guess middle school and everything else. For parents, for new parents, first time parents, you got any advice to a first time parent?
You mean to kindergarten?
Yeah. Or just you know, somebody with young children.
Let me dispel the myth that the kids don't need to know anything going into kindergarten.
Yeah.
Okay, if you're one of these parents who sent your kid to a happy-go-lucky preschool and just said, oh, you know, they'll start, you know, learning next year in kindergarten. Let them ride a tricycle for 8 hours a day. You know, let my kid be a kid. They're going to come in behind.
Right.
You know, I mean, your kid should know the letters and a bunch of sounds attached to those letters.
So there is a happy balance.
There is a happy balance. Yeah. And here's the reason for that is because the easier kindergarten is for them academically, the more open they are to the experience.
Right.
You know, the less that they're stressing out each day about holding a pencil.
Right.
You know, the kids should be able to write their name coming into kindergarten, because that'll relieve the stress of writing.
Right.
You know, the kids that haven't chosen a hand by the beginning of kindergarten, that's going to be a tough year for them. While everybody else comes in cranking out the ABCs on the first day.
Yeah.
And they're looking at a pencil going, which hand should I hold this in? But you know, pick your school carefully. Don't be so quick to dismiss public schools in your area. Shop around. Don't look, and this is the same thing I tell my high school kids. Don't just look at the best school in the area. Look at the best school for your kid.
What do you look for in a school?
Look at the student population, because generally speaking, most schools will give you a tour of the school that is not really a tour of the school. It's a tour of the best classes on campus, which your child may or may not end up in.
Yeah.
You know, the best way you can get a good look at a school is look at recess.
Okay.
Look at the yard and see how your kid would fit in.
Wow.
You know, look at the sports being played. Look at how competitive it is. You know, look at, when you're walking down the hallway, look at the work on the walls and, you know, compare it to whether or not that's something, you know, if it looks, you know, heavily academic, like book reports in second grade and stuff like that. And really pick the best school for your child, as opposed to just going for the best school, you know, ratings wise or something like that. Because it's just like parenting. It's good matches, bad matches.
Okay. Kurt Schwengel, thank you so much for being on the Brian Callen Show. You're all right, brother.
Pleasure.
You'll come back.
Rock and roll kindergarten.
You will be featured in my script. I'm basing my main character about you. I'll tell you about it. We'll talk more.
All right. Thanks, Brian.
All right. Thank you, everybody.
You've been listening to The Brian Callen Show. Be sure to visit briancallen.com for information about this episode as well as past and future episodes. You can follow Brian on Twitter @BrianCallen and like him on Facebook. Go to facebook.com/BrianCallenComedy. Thanks again for listening. We'll see you next time.